How, even though within the Waurani territory there are still 10 oil blocks, so there was a lot of confusion on why the provinces where there are oil blocks actually were the only ones that voted against this, where they had a majority
Elena,
of
we're going to leave it there, but we're going to continue after the post show with an interview in Spanish. Elena Gualenga speaking to us from Ecuador. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Latino New Yorkers were 8 times more likely to be arrested for cannabis than white New Yorkers over the past 30 years. Black New Yorkers, 15 times more likely. White, black, or brown, data shows we all use cannabis at the same rate. Now New York has changed course and legalized cannabis for adults 21 and over. We are building an equitable industry that invests in communities. Learn more and visit cannabis.ny.gov.
And you are listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM, as well as over the internet at WUSB.FM. The time is just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening. Time once again for another episode of Off the Wall.
Thank you.
A very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Okay, pretty good. You realize in 1 week, we're going to be saying this is the last show of August. In 1 week, we'll be saying that.
I wasn't aware. Now that I'm thinking about it. Yeah.
And in about 5 weeks, we'll be saying it's the last show of September.
Not 100%. I don't have a calendar, but that works out.
I cannot wrap my head around this. But yeah, time is certainly flying, and here we are, the second to last week of August, which is a traditional show for us here on Off the Wall. We talk about the summer, and
I think we say the phrase dog days.
Are these the dog days? I saw a dog earlier today. I pointed out. I said, "Look, Kyle, that's a dog," and I'm easily excited. But yeah, I guess these are the dog days.
They are. So if you're not traveling on your last minute vacation before the intrepid fall and autumn months, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
I'm trying to think, why are they called the dog days? What makes them? Because people see dogs lying around.
Yeah, they
don't want to move.
They're cooling off. Yeah,
and that because you're lying around not doing anything, you get the day.
Well, I don't
day
know that
named
it's
after
that.
You.
You know what I think it is? I think it's the cumulative effects of not one, not two, maybe several months, maybe even the lead up being warm in spring. Uh-huh. Maybe winter doesn't exist anymore, and maybe it's just on fire all the time. So you would want to cool off.
Okay, I just don't know that's a reason to have a day named after, or all the days. Of.
Well, dogs know how to cool off.
We all know how to cool off, Kyle. I mean, let's not give dogs so much credit. You know, they basically follow our lead for the most part. You know, if you went to one of those dogs that you've named the entire month of August after, and you said, hey, here's a stick. I'm going to throw the stick down there, and you're going to get up and run and work up a sweat, even though I know dogs don't sweat. And bring the stick back, and then we're going to do it again, and we're going to keep doing it, and you won't stop, and we're going to name days after. I have a problem with that. You
when
know?
When are the actual dog days?
I think this is one of them. I think we're in the midst of it. I'm just saying that dogs. Look, I love dogs, I really do, but they're not the brightest bulb in the bunch. You know what I mean? They're faithful. They'll do what you say. They'll be by your side. They'll put themselves in the line of fire for you. Somehow they'll do that. But as far as making choices, I don't know.
They're very task oriented.
Look, cats do all sorts. I've never heard anybody call something a cat day, ever. And cats are smart. Well, dogs are smart too. I mean, some dogs are smarter than others. German shepherds are very smart. They are very smart.
Yeah.
They've beaten me at certain puzzles many times. So, yeah, I'm not going to deny that.
And can be very emotive. I mean, all dogs, I think, also can read people. They can kind of gauge
very emotional
personalities. And cats are also very perceptive.
Oh, they know what's going on. They might not tell you, but they know what's going on.
It's just a reminder, if you have pets and they are in the heat or they're outside, listen to what they're doing. Are they cooling off? Maybe are they too hot? Are you going for walks on hot pavement? Avoid that. Mm-hmm. You know, take care of your animals. Don't leave them in vehicles. If they're your household family member, you know, treat them as such. Accommodate.
Exactly. And treat them nicely when they're inside the house as well.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be all like sarcastic and superior. They don't like that.
But beat the heat. Yeah. Hydrate. Uh-huh.
It hasn't been as bad as it's been in other parts of the country.
Well,
though.
We've been kind of tracking some of that. There's all of the named hurricane events.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other kinds of
hurricane
heat events.
Hillary.
Right.
Okay. I don't know who got to name that. True. It's only one L. I know that. But still, Hurricane Hillary hitting California. Republicans are just having too much fun with that. But then there was another, that's a Pacific hurricane. It's very rare. The last time this happened was 1939, where a hurricane or a tropical storm made landfall in California. But That's the Pacific hurricane system. There's the Atlantic hurricane, and we're up to H as well. I don't know what the name of the storm was, but it's hitting Texas right now. So you have two H storms hitting at the same time in basically the same part of the country. So that's unusual.
Yeah, it's like on one or the other side of the Gulf there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just fascinating times, of course. Also, I think there was an earthquake, so there was
An earthquake in the middle of the tropical. I mean, California knows how to do it, okay? Earthquakes, droughts, and floods at the same time somehow. Landslides, mudslides, earthquakes. They don't have tornadoes yet, but we'll see.
They're coining phrases like hurricane and being silly when, in fact, a lot of this calamitous, seemingly natural events are ongoing and devastating, really tragic. There's this Hawaiian fire also.
Oh my God, Maui! Yeah,
on the island of Maui, mm-hmm. and that has been also a disastrous weather event. And then we've seen other fires in BC, specifically Yellowknife.
Evacuated the entire city of Yellowknife in Northwest Territories of Canada. I don't know if people know this. The entire damn city was evacuated. True, it's only 20,000 people, but it is a city. It's the capital of Northwest Territories. That is huge. BC, British Columbia, there are fires raging, the worst they've ever seen. Spokane in Washington, it's biblical. Maui, you've got tropical storms for the first time in nearly a century. You know, if somebody had told us that climate change was real, you know, that it was actually happening. You know, nobody warned us. This is such a shock and a surprise. Is my sarcasm obvious, or do I need to explain it? Yeah, it's we knew this was happening, folks. We knew this was going to happen.
If as much was spent resisting that, if as much was spent moving away, transitioning, mm-hmm. you know, as was on campaigning and getting denialist agendas out there in the cultural discourse to kind of poison the
you're getting
the well.
To the comma in that sentence, right? Then what?
Well, I think that the cost to mitigate it would have been less because we're at these tipping points that have been predicted for quite some time, and before that, I guess, sort of suppressed mm-hmm. by an industry type. So it's a long sorted tale, but here it is confronting us at an ever increasing rate.
If anyone is denying climate change at this point, they should be treated as somebody with no grasp of reality whatsoever. Do not take them seriously. Do not put them in a position of power. And if they are in a position of power, treat them as an enemy of the state if they try and implement policies that don't fight climate change or that promote climate change, because this is what's happening all around the world. And we just focused on North America, but it's happening globally. You know, we didn't even talk about rising sea levels and glaciers and all kinds of other bad things. You know, bad for us, mostly. Bad for us, bad for wildlife. The planet's going to be fine. The planet's going to be a planet. It just won't be a planet that can harbor our kind of life. You know, maybe that's what happened to Venus. Who knows? You know, I think one day we're gonna find out that many millennia ago, we were also on Venus and we screwed that up, got into spaceships, which we somehow lost, and wound up over here. You know, well, I think that's what's going to happen.
It's like, what is the cost of exponential growth
mm-hmm.
over time?
And then we're going to terraform Mars and hop over to there. But you know what? That's it. You can't go to Jupiter after that. There's no way we could survive on Jupiter. The gravity, it's just, no, it's ridiculous. So, nature, the whatever is out there, it's not a problem. You know, we'll just be a mere afterthought. So if you want to save the human race and all the creatures that live on this planet right now, I hope we can still do it. I really hope we can still do it. But let's stop fighting it, for God's sake. Look around you. So, yeah, so things have been all right here with no major fires or heat waves or droughts or storms. Looking for, you know, a couple of tropical storms would be nice. I wouldn't mind that. We have some new additions to our garden. I don't mean plants. I mean actual creature. We have about what? Have we counted that several thousand yellow jackets now have taken up refuge on one of our walls inside a house, which is pretty amazing. We just noticed a hole in this constant stream of insects coming and going.
Yeah, basically a flight path has emerged for their activities, and it is interesting trying to even get a picture or record without jumping away, because you have in the back of your mind that this could escalate into a whole lot of these yellow jackets.
Yellow jackets are extremely aggressive from what I've read. Now, first of all, you have to be able to tell, are they yellow jackets or are they honeybees? Because they look very similar. They have yellow and black stripes, both of them. All right. The difference is that yellow jackets have brighter yellow, and they're not as furry. Their legs are not as thick, because they're not carrying, is it nectar they carry, to make honey. They don't make honey, for one thing. But the thing is, in order to see those little differences, you have to get up pretty close. There are pictures online, and yeah, you know, if you're within a few millimeters of the insect, yeah, you can tell the difference. But when you're trying not to get stung a million times, and you're taking a picture of these guys moving rather quickly, it's difficult.
Stop. They don't pose.
They do not pose for pictures, not at all. So I'm pretty sure they're yellow jackets. And what that means is they're not making honey. I don't know what they do. Why do they keep going out and coming back? What are they getting?
Yeah, I don't know either. I think there's probably some construction activity. Basically, they're occupying a territory that they've basically, I think, some kind of like woodpecker or other animal created an entry point.
The woodpecker was by earlier today, by the way.
Oh,
I was too busy to deal with it, but I heard it. And yeah, I think the woodpecker is working with the yellow jackets, because what he does is he drills a hole in the side of a building.
Right, right.
And then they go inside and they basically build whatever it is they're building in there.
It's that kind of thing. So, yeah. So it's probably a lot of redesigning the interior, maybe creating multi-unit residence.
Well,
and basically it seems like every time you look at it, there's more and more of them, and I assume they are bringing food back or expanding their numbers in advance of the winter.
Like getting takeout and bringing it back to everybody at home?
Foraging? I don't know. Does a yellow jacket forage?
They must do something. Well, they do eat other pests, so they can be a good thing.
You said that they were, yeah. Carnivores. And that's why I'm a little bit split on this. Like, they're actually doing certain things, but they're in an area that they're not really allowed.
Don't say that in front of a yellow jacket. They're allowed wherever they can fit.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And kind of welcome them.
And so far, you know, we've been outside doing our gardening things, and they haven't really taken notice of us, at least not to the extent where we are in conflict. And that sort of is in opposition to everything I've read about them. You know, that's why I thought they might be bees at first, but I'm pretty sure now they're yellow jackets.
If they are foraging and like eating up certain insects, they could be actually doing quite a bit of good. So
until we become the enemy. And the thing with yellow jackets, they can sting you multiple times. A bee can only sting you once. Yellow jacket can keep stinging you, and we might have up to 60,000 of them in that wall. There could be 1,000. Yeah, I'm not about to go there with my clipboard and my U.S. Census uniform and say how many of you are habitating in there right now, you know, because that's not gonna end well, I don't think.
No. So we're investigating what countermeasures we can take, and basically coming up with a plan.
Now everybody knows I have a U.S. Census uniform. Why did I say that? We have been looking into ways to convince them to move. We don't want to use insecticide. We don't want to do that. But what you can do is you can convince them to leave that particular area. Hopefully, not set up shop somewhere else in the same building. With what is it, peppermint?
Certain oils, yeah. I think a minty oil.
Is it peppermint?
That's what one of the things we read. But there could be other strategies. Maybe write us otw@2600.com if you have a suggestion for wasps or yellow jackets.
Yeah, now yellow jackets are wasps. I can't even say that word, wasps. It's a wasps. Really difficult word to say.
Wasps.
I can say singular, wasp. I can do that. So, you know, more than one wasp. There, I'll do it that way. And they're not bees. I'm not really sure what the distinction is other than they don't make honey. They have a queen. There's a queen wasp. And here's another difference. The beehive that makes honey, and actually that can cause structural damage to it, to a house, because of the honey dripping and all that. The bees will survive the winter. The more than one wasp will not, except for the queen. The queen will apparently live in that house over winter. And I'm not sure what happens in the springtime, but she'll emerge and she'll be fine. And she's only about an inch big. But that makes her the queen.
And quite vital to the whole situation, the hierarchy there. Yeah. So, we're going to have to convince them that this isn't quite an ideal situation. And plus, it's going to get cold, and you're disrupting basically...
It's going to get cold no matter what.
The whole of access to the outdoors and the garden. And, you know, everyone wants to be able to work and... do things there.
Yeah.
So especially before autumn, then you're going to be cleaning up.
Have you thought though about how are we going to apply the peppermint to the entrance to the yellow jacket home?
I was thinking a squirt gun.
Okay, but as soon as you fire off a squirt gun, they're going to see where it came from and they're going to come for you.
All right, well, we'll get a good vantage.
Maybe we could set up like a robotic. This is what drones are good for, okay?
Oh, you're right.
If we do that, you know, just have it hover and just, you know, spray like, you know, some peppermint oil on them and we can see what they do to the drone. I don't know. Advice, yes, as always, is welcome. Okay, but there's all kinds of other things happening this week, and some of it's a lot more important than our yellow jacket issue. The former president is supposed to surrender himself this week sometime. That's going to be fun. In fact, all 19 of the charged have to surrender themselves this week. Now, one of them is trying to get out of it. Mark Meadows. He had his lawyer ask the judge to grant an extension because apparently all the time that was given that wasn't enough. Here's what Fannie Willis, the DA down in Fulton County, Georgia, had to say to his lawyer. I am not granting any extensions. I gave 2 weeks for people to surrender themselves to the court. Your client is no different than any other criminal defendant in this jurisdiction. The 2 weeks was a tremendous courtesy. At 12:30 p.m. on Friday, I shall file warrants in the system. My team has availability to meet to discuss reasonable consent bonds Wednesday and Thursday. Signed, Fannie Willis. And oh, yeah. She's playing for real. They all are. So that's going to be something to watch. Now, there have been some cracks in this group of people, these 19 people. For instance, legal costs over Donald Trump's alleged attempts to steal the 2020 election have prompted one of his co-defendants to turn to social media to ask why the former president and his donors aren't doing more to help. I was reliably informed Trump isn't funding any of us who are indicted, said former Trump attorney Jenna Ellis on the social media platform Twitter, because I refuse to say X. Would this change if he becomes the nominee? Why then not now? Oh, boy, that's she's questioning Trump, and that's a big offense in the Republican world. Officials with the Trump campaign and the pro-Trump Political Action Committee, Make America Great Again, have not publicly commented on Ellis's question. Trump has called on donors and supporters to help with his legal fees. Think about that, folks. He's this multi-billionaire, and you're paying for his legal fees. Okay, he did all this himself, and he's going to average people like us to pay the bill. And he's not even paying his own lawyers. That's amazing. Now, Ellis is one of the 18 aides and allies indicted along with Trump in Atlanta. A grand jury accused them of organizing a conspiracy to steal the election in Georgia and other states from President Joe Biden. Ellis worked with Trump's 2020 campaign on its efforts after the 2020 presidential election. Ellis has protested harassment from Trump allies who have attacked her for not supporting his 2024 presidential bid. How do you like that? Because she's not supporting him and asking for more of this kind of punishment, she's being attacked. Ellis allegedly solicited, requested, and importuned Pennsylvania legislators present at a meeting in to unlawfully appoint presidential electors from the state. That's according to the indictment. She also allegedly made false election fraud statements. You know, I sense a flip coming here. You know, when people are treated that badly after they've put themselves out for you, yeah, they're not going to stick around. They're really not. So, yeah, look for that. Now, Rudy Giuliani, remember him? Yeah. He is also facing skyrocketing legal bills, and as well as, I imagine, bills of all sorts. He is a co-conspirator in the federal case. He has repeatedly called on Trump and those in his circle in an effort to recover millions of dollars, according to the New York Times. The former president has made vague promises to Giuliani, one of his staunchest allies, though no formal agreements have been made to cover Giuliani's legal bills in multiple cases. So sleazy. I mean, I'm not losing any sleep over how these people who I believe committed terrible crimes are being treated by somebody who committed far greater crimes. But this, you know, what's the phrase? You lie with dogs, you're going to get fleas. Is that the phrase, or did I just make that up? I'm pretty sure that's the phrase.
Yeah, you lie down with dogs, you don't be surprised if you get fleas, something like that.
Yeah, dogs are coming back into this. Everything is dog related this week.
Well, that's what happens in the dog days of summer. But the point is, he's throwing people under the bus. He's you know, once you're out with him, that's it. And yeah, I have zero sympathy. They knew what they were getting into. And they could be doing somersaults and roundoffs and handsprings, all kinds of flipping and tumbling. When the rubber meets the road, when things get real, mm-hmm. and he does his grift with sympathizers and rubes or whatever you want to call it, you know, he's trying to do his thing. And I think the whole after the nomination thing is so that he can get, you know, crack open the national committee, the RNC coffers, mm-hmm. and start twisting arms there and increasing and doubling down on his whole pressure campaign and strong arming, which is, you know, that's his comfort zone.
Well, then of course we have the debate happening tomorrow with the eight clowns that are left. Trump has refused to be a part of the debate. You know, I guess his lawyers probably don't want him to say anything, because whatever he says is probably going to incriminate him even more. But he really, I don't think he really wants to stand up to any kind of scrutiny whatsoever. It's a lot easier to talk to Tucker Carlson or to simply talk to a mob of cheering people than it is to actually be faced with some questions or challenges. Not that any of those eight candidates have any kind of spine whatsoever to stand up to him. They're all going to be, you know, kissing his ass tomorrow, even though it's not there, because they're too afraid of his base.
Deathly afraid.
Yeah, it's sickening.
Well, and they are making threats against all the judges and stuff. So, I mean, are they totally wrong for being scared? Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, but you stand up to bullies.
Well,
you don't,
especially
just,
leaders.
I mean, look at this Ellis lawyer. Mm-hmm. You know, she did everything Trump said. And then after being victimized, after doing all these bad things and being charged, she's being threatened because she doesn't come back for more. Because she's not saying, yeah, Trump in 2024. That's all it takes. So, you know, you're not going to carry these people for very long, because at some point you're going to have to break with all the commands, all the things that you're told to do. At some point you're going to have to say, wait, what about me? And when you do that, then you become the enemy.
Right. Right, because no one is looking out for you. Mm-hmm. They might have said that. You might have been a part of the pack for a minute.
They don't care. They do not care.
They eat their own.
So, so that's going to happen tomorrow. I'm not sure I'll even look at that. It'll probably be entertaining. But yeah, Trump is going to have to surrender himself in Georgia. So that'll be interesting. See how that goes. And then, of course, all these trials are going to be happening, and they will happen. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing to have justice play out. Now, speaking of justice playing out, Tennessee, remember Tennessee?
I do.
With the gun legislation that never seems to happen. Well, they're back in session. There's a House subcommittee, and they took action. I have to admit, I was surprised. They actually did something. Monday, the Tennessee House voted on allowing pieces of paper to be displayed amongst the gallery of when the public is witnessing them at work. And yeah, 8x11 paper signs in the legislature is the real issue here right now.
There's something wrong with my. Did I hear that?
Are you all right? Yeah.
Wait, did you say? Are you talking about paper being
signs.
Illegal?
Yeah, paper signs.
It's not, but it is legal. There are so people they are allowing it now.
Oh no. Paper signs carry speech. Speech is the enemy.
No, but Tennessee is very pro paper.
They might be pro paper, but they're not pro paper in the hands.
No, you can
of
open
people.
Carry paper in Tennessee.
No, well, not
you,
not
you
in
can
the house.
Take the paper anywhere you want.
Well, that argument boiled over today as the entire public was cleared out of a House subcommittee by the Tennessee Highway Patrol. It's not a highway. Why are they even there? Yesterday, the Tennessee House voted on allowing the pieces of paper along partisan lines. Democrats argued they were harmless and questioned if guns can be brought into the hall. Why the hell can't signs? Yes, you can bring guns in. But they don't want paper signs. I'm not talking about huge signs that block the view and are very distracting. 8.5x11 pieces of paper. And on them, they said things like, one kid is greater than all the guns. One kid, greater than a sign, all the guns. You're threatened by that? That's something you disagree with? That's something you're hostile to?
You could disagree with it, and it might be just one opinion, but it's also pretty innocuous. I mean, pretty harmless.
Not only do they disagree with it, they want it silenced. They want it out. I mean, these people in the Tennessee House, they are the worst of the worst. One of the first three thrown out, named Allison Polidor, asked the same question. And deny our First Amendment rights? I am not leaving. We have rights to hold a sign. If you have to drag me out, so be it. They dragged her out. Four troopers started walking towards her seat. Two of them lifted her out of her chair. This isn't what democracy looks like, she said, or shouted as she was being removed. It's an attack on First Amendment rights, she said later. I mean, I'm here for my kids, everyone's kids. They are making these laws, or lack of laws. I am here representing everyone's kids. No one should worry if their kids are going to come home from school or not. I feel like you can't sit by. When we've come to the point you can't hold up a sign, it's not okay. Disgusting. And I hope there are enough people there that will challenge these idiots and force them to do the right thing and cause one hell of a commotion if they don't. That's our obligation. That's the obligation of people who are elected to represent people. It's really sad.
Let's hope the signs multiply and pop up in other places mm-hmm. where the public has a right to express themselves and that should just multiply as a result, especially in that space and the way they treated them.
Well, we know that it has an effect. We know that it hurts them.
They're afraid of it. Yeah, they want to police it.
The mere message uh-huh. that, you know, one kid is worth more than all the guns, that is a message that hurts them.
And, of course, people with guns are the ones enforcing it.
That's true. That is very true. Okay. We all heard, I think we all heard this horrible story out of California about a shop owner who was murdered by an anti-LGBTQ+ person. Yeah, this was all about a rainbow flag that was displayed at a store. by Lori Carlton. And basically, this one guy had a problem with it and had words with her about displaying the rainbow flag. And it's not the first time. People rip down the pride flag hanging outside her clothing store in Cedar Glen. Friends said this happened multiple times in the 2 years since she opened the California store as a second outpost to her first location in Studio City. And throughout it all, the 66-year-old mother of nine remained defiant as a prominent ally to the LGBTQ plus community. And this weekend it happened once again, except this time the flag removal ended with her murder, with the perpetrator shooting her in cold blood in the street. And there are people who are saying it was only a matter of time. The fact that this doesn't surprise people is what really should be waking us up if we're not surprised ourselves. And, you know, you have to look at all the so-called leaders, all the politicians out there who spread messages of hate. And it's local, it's national, it's all over the place. We know who we're talking about. We know what governors are pushing the anti-LGBTQ platform and making it seem as if equal rights somehow are a threat to everyone else, how education is somehow a threat to all the rest of us. What that does is it instills hatred and fear and ignorance amongst everybody who hears that message and says, yeah, he's got a point. And this is a threat to me. You know, words have meaning. Words have influence. And if you're a leader of a state or a leader of a county or a leader of a city, what you say is going to resonate with some people. You will inspire people to do things, to say things. And there is no doubt that this idiot who did this, this horrible person, was inspired by one of those messages of hate. And we have got to hold them accountable. We can't just say, oh, yeah, we disagree. No, this isn't a debate. We're talking about human lives here. We're talking about people being portrayed as less than human, being portrayed as a threat to society, being told they can't do the same things as everyone else because there's something wrong with them. Now, that might have worked in the past. It's not going to work now. So the next time you hear somebody saying, well, you know, I'm not anti-gay, but, or I'm not racist, but, or I'm not anti-Muslim, but, stop them at the but. Maybe kick them in their butt. We have to raise the volume here because people are dying. People are being targeted. People are living in fear. It's not right. It never was right. But it couldn't be more obvious than now. And our silence is complicity. It allows it to happen. So go after those people who are spreading the hatred. Get them out of power. It's the only way to stop this. And hang a million rainbow flags. Such a tragedy. So for hanging a flag, I mean, Kyle, it feels like it's, you know, we're in the 1930s or something.
Yeah, it's really odd. I think especially after Pride in June, I saw a lot of flags just sort of staying up, mainly because of the types of political rhetoric and the way it's the demonization that's gone on from the outside around a community that's been attacked over and over again. It's been ongoing, the sorts of tragedies. Sometimes someone is able to step in and prevent something or defend people, but the sort of I can say whatever I want attitude, that and that none of the sort of effects will be consequential for the person saying that, especially leaders, again, leaders, so-called leaders, I think they'll be sorely surprised. And a lot of the people that that have watched this and faced it are tired of it. They're tired of fighting, and they won't stop. And I think we'll continue to surprise people in not putting up with it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a community that's, I think, a lot of people grown up hearing that kind of stuff, and it wasn't taken seriously, and it's always been a struggle. And just at a point when there is maybe a little bit more understanding or a little bit more of education overall, there's this really ugly backlash. And I don't think it's fair, no matter what, under any circumstance, to just take out your aggression over a differing opinion on other people. You cannot just beat up on this group because it's popular with your friend circle, and take out all of your sort of self-hate and misguided conceptions of the world.
Mm-hmm.
on these groups of people. They're totally it's unjustified, and they're not at all the type of people that should be messed with. I mean, there's so much support out there that, again, I think that this has reached a pitch that is it's untenable. And I don't know, people just don't want to be beat on and stuff like this, and have weapons brandished and stuff. Forget it.
Yeah. Well, it's a wake up call for many, I guess. But you know, when you find yourself attacking someone verbally, or living in fear or trepidation of someone just because of who they are, because of their religion, because of their sexual preference, because of any number of other issues, religion, whatnot. If their mere existence is the issue, you're on the wrong side. You know, we're talking about people in power that are doing horrible things to other people. Yeah, those kind of people are a threat. Those kind of people should be driven out of town and definitely out of power. But people just trying to live their lives, people trying to celebrate who they are, people trying to be treated like everybody else, if that's a problem with you, you've got a problem. But it ain't them.
And bringing that to them, I think, that's a no-no. I mean,
absolutely.
You're going to find out, like, the person that you're bringing that to is not going to tolerate it, and might surprise you. I find this
not just the person, all of us. We all have to stand together.
Bystand. Everybody's. I mean, people are watching. People are aware of this stuff, and it can't be that people expect that they can just take this out on people or treat other people like that, and they're not going to be the story. You know, people defending themselves are going to be talked about in the story of how you attacking them caused your injuries. I mean, this is not fair.
All right, moving on to another major issue, migration. 82% of New Yorkers, according to this poll, say the migrant influx is serious. Well, I'd say it's serious, yeah, but, you know, it's a very general term. How do you mean that exactly? Overwhelming share of New York voters believe the recent influx of migrants to the state is a serious problem. A majority say the state should slow down the flow. That's according to a poll released today. The Siena Research Institute survey also says a slight majority of voters, 50%, over 40%, supports the idea of moving migrants from temporary quarters in New York City to permanent housing in communities around the state. Now, this story fails to recognize the significance of that, because what that statement says is that the actions and words of people like the county executive of Nassau County, saying that Nassau County is not a sanctuary place, people don't agree with that. They think that migrants should be able to get housing in Nassau County, in Suffolk County, in Westchester, all around the state, not just New York City. You know, the story is being put out as this is bad for Hochul. I don't think it is. I don't think it is. People are criticizing her. I'm criticizing her too, because I don't think she's being forceful enough. I don't think Eric Adams is being forceful enough.
Well, he's freaking out. He had a press conference, and it sounds more like they're appealing nationally and trying to like dispel that either the governor or the mayor are at odds in any way.
Well, they are at odds, but they're being idiots about this because they're turning on each other. Look, why do we have so many migrants coming in? Because the southern states are bussing them in.
Yeah.
Not a word of criticism about that.
I think they're trying to take the tone away from any kind of infighting, because it is much more critical. And they're being bussed to California, too. Right?
Yeah.
They're being bussed everywhere.
Look, okay. So they're being bussed to different states. But the way that's happening, I think it's a responsibility that should be shared nationwide. But the way it's happening, only sending them to democratic-run cities, that is terrible to do that, to make it a political issue. That is what Republican governors have been doing. And that should be attacked by everybody. And that's not even mentioned here, not even mentioned in this.
Well, they're trying. They got to talk about it forcefully.
So voters are giving Kathy Hochul and New York City Mayor Eric Adams low marks for handling the migrant situation. Hochul received her lowest job approval rating in a Siena poll since becoming governor in August of 2021. More than 100,000 migrants over the last year, actually last year and a half, from various parts of the globe, with some sent north on buses by Republican officials in Texas. Many have come from Venezuela, according to a United Nations refugee agency. Now, the city has housed some migrants in homeless shelters, tent shelters, hotels. But as the influx continued, Eric Adams sought to bus some upstate. And, of course, some of the right-wing people up there. Think about it. You know, they're being bussed from these Republican-led states. But Republicans in this state don't want them. But they're not attacking the Republicans who are sending these migrants up to our state. No, they're attacking the Democrats in this state, who apparently have to accept 100% and figure the whole thing out themselves. The whole thing makes absolutely no sense, but it's indicative of a lack of caring, a lack of empathy, a lack of responsibility. You know, people are fleeing these places for good reasons. And in many cases, our foreign policy is a part of that. You know, it's why certain regimes are propped up. It's why certain places are falling apart, why they're run by gangs and things like that. We have ignored certain parts of the planet and helped turn them into hellholes. But our country was founded as a refuge for people trying to escape tyranny. We have an obligation. And I think it's an obligation we can easily meet, because, look, we have a situation where we need people. We need people to help run things. So many jobs are going unfilled since the pandemic. So many places have not reopened, or hours have been slashed. All of that can be solved with people entering this country who want to work. But there are stupid regulations that are in place. You're a migrant, you haven't yet been approved for citizenship, so you can't have a job. I mean, that's the most idiotic thing. But the very same people who are criticizing Democrats for not somehow solving all this with no help from Republicans will scream bloody murder if you try to give one of the migrants a job to help the situation. So basically, they're sabotaging it from start to finish. And that has to be recognized to begin with.
And punishing Democrats for even talking about it. And, of course, doubling down on their policy, which basically is about leaving them for dead at the border.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is horrible. What Texas has done with that razor wire border thing in the Rio Grande.
That's where they're happy. They don't want to talk about a comprehensive immigration policy. They use it as a political cudgel and come back to it whenever they
again,
need to.
Again, it's a very simplistic vote. It's a very simplistic way of dealing with an issue and demonizing people, turning those people into a threat. They're families. They're people just looking for a better way of life. If it were you, you'd be doing the same thing, guaranteed. I know I would be. So let's stop being so cold-hearted here and try and figure out a solution, not politicize the whole thing. All right, and finally, there was an article in Newsday a couple of days ago, which bugged me because just the way that the tone here. I'll read you the first paragraph. Marijuana use among young and middle-aged adults has significantly increased in the past decade. A newly released study finds a rise that experts attribute to increased social acceptance and expanded legalization and the stress and isolation of the pandemic. I don't know, maybe it's me, but the tone of that makes that sound like a problem. And you know, the first time I read it, marijuana use among young, right there, it's like, oh, wait, young people are using marijuana. They're not supposed to. Their brains haven't finished developing yet. And you know, it's not legal for people under 21. But that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about young people, as in people in their 20s and 30s. Not teenagers, not kids, but there's something about the article that made it seem like this is a problem. Binge drinking and the use of hallucinogens is also up. The latest numbers from the University of Michigan's decades-old Monitoring the Future study found. Although cigarette smoking is at an historic low among young adults, vaping nicotine and marijuana at an all-time high. Okay, you know, right away, marijuana somehow is thrown in with binge drinking, hallucinogens, nicotine, cigarettes, and vaping. Okay, people do vape marijuana. That is the only connection there. But it is not in the same ballpark as binge drinking and cigarette smoking. Percentage of adults who have used marijuana over the previous year, from 19 to 30, rose from 28% in 2012 to almost 44% in 2022. The percentage of marijuana users aged 35 to 50 more than doubled in that time period, from 13% to nearly 28%. And that's according to the National Institute on Drug Abuse. Access to cannabis has really contributed to people's use, partly because they didn't have to go find an illegal outlet, and partly because I think for some people that can signal that the use of the drug is okay, said R. Lorraine Collins, a public health professor at the University of Buffalo, who studies addiction and substance use. Not sure how the comment applies to people who are using marijuana for various purposes. You know, it's not addiction for most people, as far as I know.
Well, and I think there's things statistically you got to look at if you're going to it's a news product, of course, based on some research or some findings, which in and of themselves probably have some limitations in the scope and scale of what they're trying to say. So I don't know. I think like that, yes, it kind of tracks the access, also destigmatization. People might report, yeah, okay, fine, I do. They're more comfortable, in other words, mm-hmm. talking about it. And that's actually, I think, good. Because just whether we're legalizing it or not, we should have a better idea about how people are using and what their health over in their overall health and well-being, the picture of that. And the other thing I think that's important to look at is what are the rates of suicide ideation, that kind of stuff. Because also this week there was some stories about SSRIs and I think that's what they're called, but antidepressants, essentially, and their use being attributed to increased instances of suicidal ideation. And for a group overall that is stressed or maybe working a lot more or dealing with family and so forth, so on and so forth, and who may have instances of depression and be seeking out ways to manage those sorts of conditions, that increased use, you know, might be a part of that, and that it could be helpful even though it is increased. That's my point.
I just have a problem with this article that basically, you know, binge drinking defined as five or more drinks in a row. My God, I mean, I haven't even witnessed that myself. I've never done that, but that's obviously very harmful. Binge drinking showed a significant increase among those 35 to 50 from almost 25% in a two-week period in 2019 to more than 29% in 2022. And then they're comparing that to marijuana as if they're in the same ballpark. I know, you know, a lot of people who have been hurt by alcohol, people who have died from alcohol,
yeah,
never the same thing with marijuana. I'm not saying you can't abuse it. Of course you can abuse it, but is it as harmful? The statistics are simply don't back that up. Now, okay, I just want to read this part here because this is what really kind of upset me. The rise in marijuana use may be in part also be because discussion of its health benefits has enhanced its image. That's according to Nehal Vadham, Associate Director of the Center for Addiction Services and Personalized Interventions Research at Northwell Health's Zucker Hillside Hospital in Queens. Research indicates that marijuana can reduce chronic pain and help with other conditions. But some people may believe marijuana can resolve a whole range of health problems despite a lack of evidence, he said. Now, those two sentences. Research indicates marijuana can reduce chronic pain and help with other conditions. And then people may believe marijuana can resolve a whole range of health problems despite a lack of evidence. You just gave the evidence. You just said that it can reduce chronic pain and help with other conditions. The evidence is there. There have been studies about this. How can you just say there's no evidence? The average person is not going to pay attention to the specifics about what the evidence has shown, they're saying. It just seems like they're trying to demonize it and make us feel like there's all these unknowns and that people are abusing this and it's just another way of binge drinking when it's, not.
It's true. It's the comparison to binge drinking is a little bit asinine considering the risks that you put yourself at under that's after six drinks versus consumption of marijuana at all. I just health-wise and, of course, safety, you know, your overall activity and poor judgment and reaction times, all of that. There's been more research about the risks and the effects of alcohol. There has not been nearly enough. Whether you're talking benefits or risk factors in abuse or use of cannabis. So I don't know. I just, yeah, it frames it as though it is as risky a behavior. And I don't think that's the way people consume it.
The other thing that the article does not go into at all is how many people are drinking less now as a result of marijuana being legal? How many people are smoking less cigarettes now or no cigarettes because they're smoking pot instead?
That's kind of what I was getting at.
Mm-hmm.
So how many people have decided maybe that prescription medications that they were otherwise taking aren't as beneficial as some of these psychedelic treatments or, socializing with people that support them and that they can talk to?
Look, we seem to be living in a period of fear and ignorance about certain things. Now, marijuana, we're starting to get past, but look, try this. Go on to Google right now and start typing the word cigarette. See how far you get before it fills it in for you. It'll do it pretty easily. Cigarette. Cigarettes are far more deadly than marijuana. Try typing marijuana. Try typing cannabis. It won't finish the word for you. Because it's demonized, even though it's legal. Google. Yeah. All right, we're out of time. otw@2600.com is our email address. Please write to us. We'd love to hear from you. Stay tuned for Finn coming up next. And we will be back next week with another action-packed edition on the last show of August.
See you next time.
Good night.